You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come to feel what you need when what you really want inside. You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tanger. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today on hump day. Got to get over the hump. Hoping, too, that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it is not, and it has to get done, it will get done. But, of course, here in the Atlanta area, the fear of snow on the horizon coming our way this weekend. In fact, I believe my grandson told me that his game that was scheduled for Friday has been moved up to Thursday so they can possibly get it in, because Friday and Saturday is supposed to be snowing. And believe me, if it's snow, I ain't going nowhere. These folks can't drive on, you know, on clear pavement, let alone on snow and ice. Man, I ain't gonna, nah. You know, I've driven through snow a lot. I'm from Milwaukee, you know. Shoot, you have to, you know, it's part of being there. It's gonna happen. It's like everything else that's supposed to automatically happen, like death and taxes. Snow in the winter, yep. Although, because of climate change, Milwaukee hasn't been getting the snow that it has gotten a lot of times in the last 10 years or so. But when they do get it, they get packed a wallop, bam. And like other places too, man. So just like Kansas City. They said Kansas City, Missouri just had more snow than it's had since the 20s or 30s or something like that. Man. Anyway. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But of course, if you cannot listen to this program live, then go to our website, timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop-down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. There will be programs that are dated and titled. Right on, Brother Kwaku. Other programming we have here on Time for the Awakening on Mondays and Wednesday coincides with my program, doesn't it? Mondays and Wednesdays from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. Our Story, Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans, from Monday and Wednesdays from 7 to 9. On Thursday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., the Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. Friday at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Sunday, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., Pinckney to Pinckney, the activist Reverend Edward Pinckney from Benton Harbor, Michigan, from 5 to 6. All right, and then once again, at 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. The Inyasasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. January 7th. All unorganized violence is like a blind man with a pistol. Chester Heems. In order to constructively nation build, words must have a clear lines of defense. Our nation's social and cultural parameters must be established and stated without confusion if words are to know what they are defending and fighting against. What is and what is not acceptable thought and behavior for African people must be explicitly and succinctly stated. To start, there must be basic fundamental lines of defense drawn around our essence, which cannot be questioned or withdrawn. Otherwise, as we already find out too often, warriors end up fighting meaningless battles against each other, fighting to make that which is not us into something African, and fighting alongside those who look like us but work against our liberation. To identifying these parameters, warriors must look to our traditional ways. We must study what makes us African. Only in this way will we be able intuitively and to see that which is inherently African as we forge a new reality out of the old. If nothing else, we will find that only Africans are family, that marriage and children are our utmost priority, that men and women are innately equal, that sexual confusion and perversion are the antonym to our human character and an affront to the universe. From this, we can separate ourselves from those who obviously are not or who can be mistaken as being African and establishing strong, well-defined, uncompromising lines of defense. Ashe. Affirm, I have established clear lines of defense. Affirm, I have established clear lines of defense. January 8th. The ability to live and work together to attain and maintain freedom is not granted automatically at birth. It must be taught. This ability, this African personality, is a set of characteristics, qualities, and behaviors that must be taught, developed, and reinforced. Womb to the tomb by our educational process. Zinyiga. In order for a people to extend itself through time and intact, they must pass themselves, their personality, and lessons learned down through each successive generation. These things must be taught. Technological proficiency and life's lessons do not come through osmosis. Those new to the society must be taught the dominant people's reason and beliefs. They must become familiar with and internalized as their own, that the people's priority, preferences, and dislikes and pleasures. They must learn to think within the logic behind their host's organic, mechanical, and spiritual choices. They must become acquainted with how things work for that people and why behind their choices of that people's particular idiosyncratic ways. Socialization and tradition are two factors generally related to this direct, all-encompassing transfer of knowledge from one generation to the next. And because who we are as Africans have become so severely distorted within Eurocentric society, our essence and purpose must be re-explained to us in their genetic state, free from the demanding, dehumanizing character of this alien and alienated un-African cultural wasteland. Ashe. Affirm, I have an African purpose and program. Ashe. Affirm, I have an African purpose and program. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Family, a little tea here. You know, I've been on the mic here a couple times, hacking and coughing, and I apologize. But my lady, she hooked me up. You know, she got to watch over me, man. She got to take care of me. We're going to talk today about Bobby Wright. I'm kind of setting things up for Friday. I'm going to come hard on Friday
in terms of why we got to get the out of here, because this doesn't make any sense. And the more we stay in it, the more insane we become. You know, we have to. In fact, Friday's program is Exodus. That's right, Exodus. Exodus in the Bible did not happen. Stories in the Bible are stories. They're not historical. They didn't happen. No. Supposedly, during the reign of Ramesses II, one of the most egotistical of the kings or pharaohs or leaders of Kemet, there's not one damn thing written about a person named Moses. There's not one damn thing written about the plagues that hit Kemet by the Kemites. I ain't talking about no Egyptian shit. I ain't talking about Hebrews, supposedly. No, there's nothing. It didn't happen. There was a symposium back in the 80s, I believe it was. I know one of the people who attended was Ra'anephra'aman, the Shechemah of the Aseroset Society. He attended that symposium. But it was understood that it didn't happen. You know, but we need an exodus. So we'll deal with that on Friday. But look, lay some groundwork. Why? Today we're going to, you know, the program I did on Bobby Wright last year, I think it was early last year, didn't come out in the recording. So I hope that it does today, because I'm going to do it today a little bit more in depth with Dr. Bobby Wright. And, you know, in Milwaukee in the early 80s.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
In the early 80s, at the Hyatt Regency, it just opened up. And one of the first programs at the Hyatt Regency was the Black Political Convention. You know? In fact, Ron Daniels was there. And when I saw Ron Daniels' ass in Baltimore last year, he said he wasn't. But then again, you know what? I shouldn't trip, because he may be like me, just forgot. That happens. You know? Happens. But the banquet speaker on Saturday night was Dr. Bobby Wright. Yeah. Yep. Met Dr. Bobby Wright. Menticide. So we're going to talk about Bobby Wright, and we're going to go ahead and get off into that history and talk about the psychopathic racial personality, his dynamic essay. And believe me, you get the book. It's just a few other pieces in there, small amount of work. You read it in a minute. Probably take it on, maybe not take it on the plane with you, because you might get mad at them crackers. No, I'm just kidding. You always maintain your cool, because you know what time it is. You know, there's a time and a place for everything. That's always understood. There's a time and a place for everything. Yeah. And so I fell in love with Bobby Wright, man. You know? Yeah. Come on, huh? Don't tell me I lost. I better not have lost all this. You got to be kidding. Okay, here it is. I'm trying to get. There we go. Thank you. Cooperate, please. Don't do this to me. You know, I'm not very technologically savvy to begin with. Boy, you throw stuff in my a monkey wrench. A monkey wrench. Into the process. That messes things up. Bobby Eugene Wright. Born March 1st, 1934, in Hobson City, Alabama. He made his transition April 6, 1982, in Chicago. Wow. He passed a few years after I saw him in Milwaukee. That was early 80, 81, I believe it was. So, yeah. Was an American clinical psychologist, scholar, educator, political activist, and humanitarian. He received his education and all those degrees in counseling from Chicago State University and his PhD in clinical psychology from the University of Chicago in 72. At the point of his untimely death, he was the president-elect of the Association of American African Psychologists. During the 1960s, he worked as a truant officer in Chicago public schools and led a successful challenge to racist hiring practices of American African teachers. His political work has been credited with helping lay foundations that later enable the election of the first American African mayor, Harold Washington, in 1983. And he had passed, but he didn't get a chance to see Harold Washington get elected, but he laid the foundation. That's why it's important that you just do the work. You may not see it, but believe me, because you've done the work, things will happen. Two of his scholarly works has been described as highly influential by the 2013 National Conference on African Psychology. The Psychopathic Racial Personality, 1974, republished in 84 and other years as one in a series of essays. And Menticide, the Ultimate Threat to African Survival. His work emphasized the need to recognize psychological warfare, racial warfare, and for Africans to define themselves in their terms while analyzing the psychology of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, white supremacy. Not only is it's for Africans to define themselves in their terms while analyzing, but its victims, and to develop a durable social theory, and associated institutions to change the politics of mental health. The social political model was an influence from Africans in the United States that took their own lives in 1980 due to depression. Bobby Wright's argument of the social political model was that all persons of African descent living under Caucasian domination that took their own lives were victims of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, white supremacy. He saw African suicide as a political dynamic and also of self-destruction. Due to the psychological adaptation, he believed that the depression because of Caucasian domination was the main reason why American Africans took their own lives. The social political theory is now used to influence the interpersonal psychological theory of suicide behavior through the Bobby Wright perspective, was more of a Western perspective. Despite Bobby Wright's limited amount of writing on the social political model, his theory is used to test emotional disturbances, research physical and mental health workers of Africans living in the United States. The social political model was used with a multi-level social integration model, which includes the implications that police killings and state cover-ups and were connected with claimants' own life-taking behavior. The social political model is now used to seek suicide prevention and intervention. I'm not going to go through all the, but I want to read this one. Dr. Bobby Wright's stance on atheists and politically and unhesitatingly attacked theism and religious beliefs. He wrote the following in the fall of Black's Books Bulletin in 1974. Because of their lack of ethical or moral development, there is no conflict between white religion and racial oppression. The white race has historically oppressed, exploited, and killed blacks, all in the name of their God, Jesus Christ, and with the sanction of their churches. For example, it is generally overlooked that the Ku Klux Klan is primarily a religious group. Also, blacks should never forget that the Pope Pius XI's blessing of the Italian planes and pilots on their way to bombing Ethiopian men, women, and children who only had spears to defend themselves. Yeah, that'll be read again. This shows you, speaking at the annual American African Institute in 1981, prior to his death, in response to a question about African organizations, he stated, "This shows you the nature of the beast. This shows you about menticide. This subject should be talked about in churches. Guess what you think about when you go to church? Everything but what to do. You talk about some God that nobody ever did find. Let me tell you something about God. If there is a God, and I can say that, number one, he or she is mad at us. Number two, he or she is not on our side. Number three, he or she is indifferent. Number four, he or she is white." I love Bobby Wright. Let me read this last reference. Pressed by further questioning to defend his position, he elaborated on Einstein's remark about achieving immortality by reaching the speed of light and thus stopping time. His thought immortality is that people cannot conceptualize time stopping it. In this same way, certain people cannot conceptualize a world without God and a lot of other things I can talk about that cannot be even conceptualized. You still don't go beyond your imagination. It just violates everything you believe and have been trained to believe. But most certainly I will tell you this, nothing that operates in this world today can be attributed to God. It can be attributed to a supreme being. Nothing. I contributed to a supreme being, and I mean nothing. All right. We're going to get off into Dr. Bobby Wright. Psychopath of the racial personality. I'm going to play a little bit of Menticide. I don't know where that conference was, but we'll play a little bit of that. And then we'll take your questions and your comments or concerns. And once again, I'm trying to lay this particular stuff down because I want to make sure that we have a good discussion on Friday, believe me. The psychopathic racial personality. In a bullfight, after being brutalized and while making innumerable charges at the movement of a cape, there comes a time when the bull finally turns and faces his adversary, with only the movement being his heaving bloody sides. It is believed that for the first time, he really sees the matador. This final confrontation is known as the moment of truth. For the bull, this moment comes too late. The experience of American African people African people all over the world presents an analogous situation. For hundreds of years, Africans have been charging at the banners that are held by the European matadors. These banners have been represented by concepts such as democracy, capitalism, Marxism, religion, and education. The banners remain constant as long as Africans were assets. However, with technology and worldwide industrialization on a rampage, resulting in a further exploitation of Africa's resources, which in turn produces an increase in Africa's national consciousness. Let me stop right there and say this. The DR is suing. What manufacturer is that? What is DR? The Democratic Republican suing one of the tech people because of what it has done in exploiting Africans and taking the main things that make Apple. They're suing Apple. They're suing Apple. You know, if it's not for Africa, the continent, and Africans, this worldwide rampage of technology wouldn't happen. The artificial intelligence being produced wouldn't happen. And the problem is that you don't need people. People will be they will be expendable. And who are the people who want to be expended? I don't know if you heard some of the things that I've played over the years. But Caucasians talk about, eliminating us. where they have conferences and they openly talk about taking our resources and killing us. However, with technology and worldwide industrializations on a rampage, resulting in a further exploitation of Africa's resources, which in turn produces an increase, which in turn produces an increase in Africa's national consciousness. Africans are now a threat and a liability to the European. Therefore, the banner held by the Matador represents only one concept, genocide. As a consequence, the major research that Caucasian scientists are involved in today is genocidal in nature. Nuclear warfare, population control, medication control, genetic engineering, psychosurgery, electrical stimulation of the brain, and a highly complex science of behavior technology. Indeed, it is Africa's moment of truth. It is time for Africans to look at the Matador. This presentation is based upon the following very simple premise. In their relationship with African people, Europeans are psychopaths, and their behavior reflects an underlying biological transmitted proclivity with deep roots in their evolutionary history. The psychopath is an individual who is consistently in conflict with others or groups. He is unable to experience guilt, is completely selfish and callous, and has a total disregard for the rights of others. This premise is supported by overwhelming scientific evidence. Marnar Delaney, Du Bois, Fanon, Garvey, Welsing, Chancellor Williams. There is a scientific dictum which states, everything that exists exists in some amount, and if it exists, it can be measured. One of the best methods that can be used to measure the psychopath's traits of the Caucasians is observing and analyzing their universal over behaviors and attitudes towards Africans. However, in doing so, since Africans have been enslaved and colonized by Europeans, a very subtle psychological problem is posed, of which every African should be aware. Intellectual insight about Caucasians or Europeans does not ensure that there will be a corresponding change in Africans' behavior and attitude towards Caucasians, particularly when there is a threat involved. For example, everywhere we find Europeans and Africans in close proximity to each other, whether it is in Chicago, Zimbabwe, the Caucasians are in control. It defies all laws of probability. Yet Africans rarely question this extraordinary universal phenomenon, which defies every known statistical law of probability. In fact, Africans denounce those who simply raise the question, which, diminishes, such as, we should not be racist and treat them as they had treated us. In fact, Caucasians are not going to tolerate or allow us to treat them as they have treated us. So that requires no discussion. However, the subject of Africans should be discussed. The subject of Africans' racism. We don't have it racist. A functional definition of racism could be the oppression and exploitation of a people because of their race. I use the word culture. I don't use the word race because race is not a real concept. You know, there's only one race, the human race, of which African people are. And we know that Caucasians created the concept of race. There is proof. You can go look up Carol Linnaeus, Johann Blumenbach. Go look it up. African intellectual enlightenment does not always lead to genuine insights and can be very damaging to the intellect, as it reflected by the behavior and attitudes of many eminent African scientists. For example, Kenneth Clark has spent his life making a fortune studying the victims of Caucasian oppression, his own people, and now speaks of the irrelevance of color. Dr. Alvin Poussant, who seems to be the Johnson Publishing Company, Ebony Magazine, psychiatrist in residence, ignores the widespread genocidal programs directed against Africans and writes such trivia as the difference between sex and love, blacks and Jews, an appeal for unity, and why blacks kill blacks. Blacks kill blacks because they've never been trained to kill whites. Africans kill Africans because they've never been trained to kill Europeans. Therefore, it is outside their experience. Historically, the European system has encouraged the killing of Africans because Africans have been led to believe that they are part of the psychopath system. They simply follow the practice. Dr. James Comer is another African psychologist whom the psychopath has so overwhelmed that he has moved, as his book suggests, beyond black and white. Cobbs and Greer follow this tradition of studying Africans themselves rather than their oppressor by concluding in Black Rage that Caucasians make us, Africans, so mad that we kill ourselves. African scientists generally rationalize their investigations as proof to Caucasian scientists that Africans can be scientifically objective. On the subject of objectivity in science, this author agrees with Dr. Jacob Carruthers, who in his brilliant essay, Science and Oppression, states, science is not objective, nor is it neutral. An African scientist who moves outside the psychopath's approved course of study takes the chance of being labeled unscientific, emotional, biased, etc. Additionally, funds are only available to African scientists who support the approved course of study themselves. Many very competent African students who are naive about Caucasian scientific inquiry are flunked out at schools because of their insistence on studying the problems, the psychopaths, rather than the effect. African students. African students must be taught that Caucasian educational institutions are the matador's cape that protects Caucasians from African scientific inquiry, which would be exposed an unthinkable depth of psychopathology. In order to understand the psychopath's personality, one must differentiate between three classifications: the neurotic, the psychotic, and the psychopath. The definitions of psychopathology have been established and adhered to by the World Health Organization's International Classifications of Disease. The contributions of African people in determining these classifications are almost non-existent. don't ask us for a damn thing. Who said you should? Generally, the neurotic is a person who suffers a great deal over problems that are handled fairly routinely by well-adjusted personalities. The major problem for neurotics is that they're an inordinate amount of anxiety. However, in contrast to the psychotic, the neurotic has very good reality contact. The psychotic, in addition to being out of touch with reality, has severe malfunctioning and many times has to be hospitalized for long periods. This leaves the psychopath. Scientists agree that there is no science without classification. For the disciplines of psychology and medicine, it is not necessary for labels or diagnosis to have concrete reality. They can be retained if they are useful in understanding and treating disease. For example, the majority of the patients who are admitted or committed to mental health hospitals in this country are diagnosed as being schizophrenic. Although there is no general agreement among psychiatrists and psychologists on the definition of schizophrenia. However, even though it is not required, this presentation does not have concrete reality, namely Europeans' behavior and attitudes towards Africans. Behavior scientists generally agree that the understanding of characteristics of psychopathic personalities are the almost complete absence of ethical or moral development, and an almost total disregard for appropriate patterns of behavior. This characteristic has led to a misunderstanding of the psychopath as someone who does not know the difference between right and wrong. This belief is not true. Psychopaths simply ignore the concept of right and wrong. They know the difference. They just ignore it. I don't give a damn. By ignoring this trait in Caucasians, the lack of ethical and moral development, Africans have made and are still making a tragic mistake in basing the worldwide African liberation movement on moral persuasion. It is pathological for Africans to keep attempting to use moral persuasion on a people who have no morality, where culture is the variable, where race is the variable. Because of their lack of ethical and moral development, there is no conflict between Caucasian religion and racial oppression. The Caucasian race, the Caucasian culture, has historically oppressed, exploited, and killed African people, all in the name of their God, Jesus Christ, and with the sanction of their churches. It is generally overlooked that the Ku Klux Klan is primarily a religious organization. Further, Africans should never forget the image of the Pope blessing the Italian planes and pilots on their way to bombing Ethiopian men, women, and children who only had spears to defend themselves. This behavior is not surprising, since Europeans, Caucasians, used the scriptures to justify their treatment of Africans. According to the book of Genesis, Noah placed a curse on his son Ham, forever dooming all of his descendants to be the servants of God. Naturally, Europeans interpret Africans as the descendants of Ham and themselves as the servants of God. If one follows that interpretation, it is interesting. It arises, if Ham was black and Noah was his father, and Noah was black and only allowed animals on the ark, since Caucasians deny that blacks and whites sprung from the same source, a position that this writer agrees with, then we know from the impeccable source how Caucasians got there. Unlike other extreme pathological syndromes, only a very small percentage of psychopaths are committed to mental hospitals, with other small percentages ending up in penal institutions. The majority of psychopaths function very well in society. They are generally average or above average in intelligence, have engaging personalities. In addition, they are usually very impressive and competent, with no feelings of insecurity, anxieties, or any other manifestations of psychoneurosis. They appear to be very honest and humane, but really have no concern or commitment except to their own selfish interests. Psychopaths will consistently make comments that they have no intentions of keeping and show great indignation and anger when their integrity is in question. Africans in the United States learned this lesson very well during the civil rights movement and the confrontations of the 1960s. The Caucasian sheriffs and judges showed their greatest hostility when Africans began to quote the law to them. This behavior can be seen clearly in Caucasians' attitude towards African liberation. Caucasian liberals, which give lip service to African liberation while arguing that Africans are going too fast. Caucasians, conservatives, Africans have too much already. The psychopath is usually sexually inadequate, with a very limited capacity to form close interpersonal relationships. The European sexual inadequacy psychologically explains the constant projection of Africans as a supersexual beings and has a lacking in sexual inhibitions. Yet it is Europeans who streak, mate swap, participate in orgies, all of these sexual behaviors in a desperate attempt to achieving meaningful relationships would consistently, due to their psychopathic makeup, elude them. European sexual dysfunction has produced tragic consequences in the African community. They have attempted to achieve sexual gratification by such methods as raping African women. The rationale is that African women are oversexed and inviting their attention. Historically, the justification for castrating African men was their animal passion, which had to be contained. In 1893, Frank Liston of Chicago, a Caucasian doctor, proposed that castration would conserve the energy of the African community. The sustained sexual atrocities committed against African people by the Caucasians have no parallel in history. There is no scientific explanation except under the rubrics of psychopathology. Psychopaths' inability to accept blame or learn from previous experience can be easily proven. They never accept blame for Africans' environmental condition, which are clearly the result of Caucasian oppression. On the contrary, Africans are held responsible for the deterioration of their communities, even though all of the property is Caucasian-owned and controlled. In addition, municipal services are withdrawn from African communities, and most of their communities have been used up before Africans are allowed to move into them. In the fields of mental health and drug abuse, Caucasians are at their psychopathic best. The United States government position on drug users is that addicts are cured when they cease antisocial behavior, regardless of how long they have to be maintained on methadone or other drugs. Dr. Joseph Jaffe and Edward Senaze, the czars of the U.S. drug abuse program, with the assistance and protection of African addicts and ex-addicts, have created one of the most destructive programs in our community, the methadone maintenance program. The United States government is the largest supplier of drugs to addicts in our community. Sine takes the position that African addicts should not be given placebos or just plain orange juice. If sexually frustrated Caucasian housewives can be given sugar pills rather than real drugs, why can't African addicts be given orange juice without the methadone, since they cannot tell the difference? Sine states that giving African addicts pure orange juice without the methadone is unethical. Therefore, it can be deduced that doctors such as Sine believe that it is an honorable act to give Africans drugs. Community mental health centers are in such disarray that space does not permit an adequate discussion. They're underfunded and therefore understaffed, with the usual staffing pattern consisting of all Caucasian professionals and all African low-paid non-professionals. That's that same way today, family. That's why I'm reading this, and that's why I'm going to bust this shit out on Friday, because this is ridiculous. This is 50 years ago, and it's like today. Additionally, almost every existing center uses the medical model. The belief that the major problem in African person without any regard for their circumstances or environment. Furthermore, community centers and government agencies are heavily influenced by the American Medical Association, which is one of the most overtly racist and probably the most powerful organization in the United States. A very vicious funding game is played with African mental health centers, in which the U.S. government supplies funds, which with a stipulation being that African community must find matching funds. Needless to say, there are usually no matching funds for African mental health professionals. Therefore, the federal government reverts back to the U.S. government. Psychopaths also reject a constituted authority and discipline. The presence of this trait in the Caucasians has gave grave implications to Africans who seek legal solutions to their problems. This especially applies to Africans in the United States who are the world's only legally created group. Legally created group, that's right, that's created through the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, which can be repealed at any moment by the Congress or declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. As long as this condition exists, we are one step, 5 minutes away from slavery. For Africans in the United States to place their destiny in the hands of the Supreme Court is an extreme form of psychological blindness and a pathological rejection of history. The Supreme Court of the United States has always used the prevailing Caucasian political climate as a criterion for dealing with the questions of culture. For example, as a result of the infamous 1954 school desegregation decision, Africans have lost an estimated 35,000 teaching administrative positions in the South. Further, African principals of African schools are now janitors in integrated schools, and the same thing is going on to happen with African teachers in the North. Eventually, the Supreme Court is going to find the 54 decision unconstitutional, but by that time, Africans will have taken over all the schools, including colleges. Excuse me. By that time, whites would have taken, and you see that. You see that for them to get the funding, so many HCBUs are integrated. The psychopathic's behavior of Supreme Court justice is consistent with other Caucasian professionals, lawyers, doctors, judges, politicians. They consistently take advantage of Africans without any guilt, anxiety, or threat to their self-esteem. For example, in the African community, Caucasian doctors are the largest group of drug pushers. They prescribe unneeded and dangerous drugs and perform unnecessary operations. Caucasian scientists use Africans in a very destructive study, such as the Tuskegee experiment, in which African men were denied treatment for syphilis, and evidence suggests were deliberately infected. The role that Caucasian scientists have played in black oppression should not be surprising to Africans because Caucasians have historically been the planners of African oppression. And as a rule, they never ask why, but only how. This behavior of Caucasian scholars, Jensen and Shockley, are classic examples of intelligence in the service of racist institutions or their psychopathic behavior. Jensen and Shockley are simply following the psychopathic tradition of Hegel, Carlyle, Galton that has continued for hundreds of years. History is replete with examples of Caucasian scientists professing the inferiority of us. The eminent Dr. Samuel Cartwright of Louisiana diagnosed Africans who ran away from their captors as having a disease of the mind. We have a disease that makes us run away from oppression and slavery. Dr. Robert Bean of Johns Hopkins University proposed that Africans have smaller brains than Caucasians, and since brain efficiency depended upon the number of positions of nerve cells and fibers in the brain, Africans had less capacity for development than Caucasians. Dr. Carl Jung, one of the Caucasian giants of psychology, stated that Caucasian sexual inadequacy was Caucasian sexual inadequacy was due to having to live together with a barbaric race. Us. The white used a scientific justification for cultural oppression can be found in even the most inadequate library. What makes Caucasian scientists such as Shockley and Jensen so dangerous to the African community today is that not only do they present so-called scientific proof of the threat, they also offer solutions. With the present level of technology available to them, this should not be taken lightly. However, it is self-defeating and useless for African scientists to debate the question of race versus mass media with Caucasians such as Shockley and Jensen. White scientists simply want to expose for their ideas. Additionally, it is pathological for an African to discuss with Caucasians the question of whether or not Africans should exist. For all other people, simply raising the question about their existence is tantamount to a declaration. I mean, read that again, family. For all other people, simply raising the question about their existence is tantamount to a declaration of war. This, then, is the psychopathic personality of the matador. The one constant in this ever-changing world is the behavior of Caucasians in their relationship to Africans. This is a very challenging problem. And an inevitable question is, what should Africans do? One dilemma posed for Africans is that it consistently appeals for liberation through channels created for them by the psychopath, namely democracy and communism. A cursory example of both systems immediately points out the futility of Africans giving them any more considerations. Africans must accept the reality that for Caucasians, democracy and racial oppression are not conflicting ideas. The fact that Africans have been enslaved for over 350 years by a democratic form of government should be evident enough. Furthermore, a democratic government presumes an inherent equality of races. It does not provide methods of liberation for those who are not equal. Communism can be dismissed as an alternative with even less discussion. For communism to be viable requires the cooperation of the masses, and of course, Caucasians ain't having it. with that as a primary condition, communism needs no further discussion. However, since Africans have been finally rejected democracy as an alternative by attempting to burn down its bastion, the United States, there are signs that it is now time for Marxists to try to contain them. Throughout Africa, Marxists have enlisted African heads of state as allies. These African leaders go to great lengths to deny that our struggle is racial. Yet the only true independent nations on the African continent are those headed by Caucasian invaders. This is the early 70s. One of the greatest tragedies in the relationship between Africans and Arabs, for Africans to accept Arabs as anything but Caucasian invaders, is a pathological denial of reality. In the oil crisis, the slave trade from the north treated Africans worse than they treated some European nations. This behavior is consistent for white psychopaths. No Caucasian nation in the world encourages African immigration, but there is a great effort throughout the world to integrate Africa. Again, the question of what to do. There is no evidence that the African and the Caucasian races can live in close proximity to each other without Caucasians attempting to oppress and exterminate them. In fact, there is overt, overwhelming evidence that even Caucasian groups cannot live together. Irish and the English, the Greeks and the Turks, you know, Arabs and Jews. Behavior scientists generally agree that there is no known cure for the psychopath. In fact, it is a widely held belief that the only successful treatment for psychopaths is incarceration, psychosurgery, or death. Therefore, since Africans are at war with psychopaths, violence is the only way. Brother Lerone Bennett proposed in his brilliant essay, Time, Space, and Revolution, that it is hard to tell by revolutionary clocks. Likewise, it is difficult to tell direction by a revolutionary compass. Unfamiliarity with the terrain and the instrument has disorientated us, and the result is obvious in various inadequate and dangerous behavioral patterns. Some have become catatonic and do not move at all, but wait for divine intervention, while others place their faith and energies in charismatic guys who are just as lost as they are. These Africans seem to ignore Brother Bennett's depressing, truthful warning that history does not forgive those who lose their way. Still others fantasize that Africans have reached their destination in an attempt to act accordingly as free men. Some persevere and pursue old beaten paths that evidently lead back to the starting point. But there are those others whose minds have moved past the psychopath to impose new boundaries, and they have begun to blaze new paths toward Africans' rendezvous with destiny. So it is with Shaka Zulu in the 1700s, Dessalines, 1804, Haitian Revolution, Martin R. Delaney, Henry McNeil Turner, Marcus Mosiah Garvey, El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, Malcolm X, Jameel El Amin, H. Rapp Brown, and Chancellor Williams. The answer to Africans' problems can be found in the works and lives of these African heroes. Francis Cress Welsing, get his sister in there. They all looked at the matador or the psychopath for who and what he is, and they moved against him. The struggle must continue, and we will conquer without a doubt. Brothers and sisters, the psychopathic racial personality, the words of the eminent Dr. Bobby Wright. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, I'm going to play couple pieces until you can hear the voice of Dr. Bobby Wright. Like I said, he was, you know, a dynamic brother. And so we're gonna do that. And then we're gonna, like I said, play a couple of pieces that I meant to side. Yeah. All right. tell you, I'm honestly, fan. I'm dealing with some old technology. Okay, on an old pad. Yeah. Okay. All right. There we go, family. Yeah. Sooner or later, you know, you just keep working with it. You know? That's what you do. All right. This is African Perspectives. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back once again, brothers and sisters, African Perspectives, here on your Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blocktalkradionetwork.com. Yeah. Joe Sample, Wayne Henderson. Brothers from the Crusaders, the Jazz Crusaders. Great, isn't it? It is. It really is. Love it. All right. Let me think. I know. Oh, man. Okay. I'm going to play this one. This is Bobby Wright. Presentation on Mendicide. Just a little bit here. And then try to play number 7. If I can pull that one up.
I want to just pick on the Catholics and all this, but I better say something about the Catholics. The Catholics is an interesting phenomenon, being a black Catholic is an interesting phenomenon. First thing, if you stop to think about it, and I guess you don't think in religion, you believe. It's difficult to talk to people who believe. But the fact that black people would get on their knees to kiss a white man's ring. Now that's just, even the most conservative black should think about that for a minute. I mean, to kneel on your knees and say this is an act of God, to kiss a white man's ring, and if he turns around, other parts of his anatomy, according to where the ring is. But let me tell you about the Catholics. Many of you are not old enough, but you can go back tonight and ask your parents and your grandparents. Ask them about Ethiopia. They will tell you about Catholics, your grandparents and your parents. They are not political at all, but they remember Selassie. Selassie was a sacred person to your parents and your grandparents. According to how old they are, some of you are young. Your grandparents, you ask them about it, they don't talk about it. But Haile Selassie was a sacred figure to black folks. And in 1936, the Italians took and invaded Ethiopia with planes. The Ethiopian did not have guns. And we have pictures of the Pope Pius blessing those planes who was going to drop bombs on Ethiopian men, women, and children. And they also, Life magazine, published pictures of black men and boys in Africa, in Ethiopia, throwing spears at airplanes. And they laughed about it. Throwing spears at airplanes. And they said, we have no courage. That's menticide. And yet you're a Catholic. You're a Catholic. No, you don't know your history. And if you don't know your history, you die. And that's why they laugh at us. That's why they have so much contempt for us. Because no matter what they do to us, we still say accept us. We never try to look out for ourselves. We never say let's take our destiny in our own hands. Let's look out for ourselves. We're men and women. We're grown men and women. We're not boys and girls. We're not in this world playing games. Why is it so difficult for us to do that? Menticide prohibits us from even thinking the idea. Just the idea. Do not even let us think, why are all of you so much different religion? I can start on this row and go down it. And every one of you will be a different religion. Why? Why? Not everyone. I'm talking about, but why? Why is it? Why is this religion? What is it about this religion? That's where we must begin the question. It's very threatening to many of us. Last time I got up here in Seattle and said this, it was really a problem. But so we don't even want to discuss it. We don't even want to think about it. Don't give me no bad news. That's what the Evelina said. Don't bring me no bad news. I don't hear no bad news. You see, so let's go on. That too is menticide. Even if you look, one of the things we did, we took the TV shows for some black parents in Chicago. And we took these TV shows. And we looked at the black shows and how many negativisms were in those black shows. And you'd be surprised in things like the Jefferson and all the good times and all that stuff. How many negativisms win it compared to anything positive at all? And in fact, the most healthy relationship in a Jefferson is interracial couple. She comes down and beat up on poor George. The maid beat up on George. Yeah, do you really believe a brother would take that from a maid? You've got to be crazy, but we laugh at it. We laugh at it. If you believe that, you believe you need my professional services after this meet. That a brother would take that from a maid. Open her mouth and push him down. And he's paying her. Now, brothers don't even take that from people they don't pay. Now, my point is very, very clear. My point is very clear. White people are psychopathic. They're psychopathic in nature. And their behavior reflects an underlying biologically transmitted proclivity, which is rooted deeply in their evolutionary history. All that means, all those words mean is that the white behavior and attitude is genetically determined. Okay. They got a camera breaking. Okay. Let me tell you what that means, because this becomes very important. What it means is this. If indeed, as many brothers and sisters believe, that racism is learned behavior, then it can be modified and changed by experience and by training or education. However, if you take the position that all of these years that they've been in contact with the black race, that it is genetically determined, then you have two options. Either you must neutralize it, just like any other disease. You must neutralize it, or you must destroy it. There's no other option. Nothing in the history prepares us to believe or indicates to us that racism is not genetically determined. Everywhere we see whites, they have a hatred for black people. A hatred. An undying hatred. Now, we have all sort of proposals on what it is. Some take the position, see, even to show you mental side and what it can do, and show you even what it can do to us, and then I'm finished with this part of it. And we'll start taking questions, so y'all may want to ask questions. If you look to Africa, you go to Africa, and you see all of these big, huge statues, and they're in perfect condition except one thing. Guess what it is? Their noses and mouths are knocked off. Even the great Sphinx. Who did it? Give me your history. Napoleon. Napoleon said that nigga's laughing at me. Knock his nose or mouth off. The great Sphinx. Read your history. And guess what they have convinced us? They have convinced us that we're the most primitive race ever lived. And ask yourself one question. If we are so primitive and we never had a culture, why are they digging in Africa rather than Europe? Okay. So the question is, why are they digging in Europe? If you really look at all the artifacts and everything else, you see, if you want to study African history, guess where you got to go? To Europe. You got to go to France and England. To go museums. To show you finally about menticide and how it works. They have convinced themselves that King Tut is not black. King Tut is not black.
Okay, we're going to try to get to number 7 here. You know. And then that'll be the deal.
So they brought King Tut here, and whites lined up for years to watch King Tut, trying somehow to identify with history. If there's such a great civilization and such a great race, where is the evidence? I'll tell you how they did it. They said that the Egyptians were not black. Now, they would not say they're white. See, they won't say they're white. And they won't even say they're brown. They would just say they're not black. See? And yet our spirituals, even, that we didn't listen to, go down, Moses, where? Way down where? In Egypt land. Wait, not way up. Way where? Down in Egypt land. Tell who? Pharaoh. I said, let my people go. And they weren't talking about, they were talking about us. That's our history book. The Bible, Old Testament, is our history book. And our history book. And they took the history book, and that's what men aside, and turned it against us. How did they do it? How did they do it? They did it through the Bible. Through the Bible. Name it where? The book of Genesis. In the book of Genesis, where they said about Noah. Noah got drunk, according to the white interpretation. Noah got drunk, and his son Ham, while covering him up, observed him naked. And for that act, God, this is their interpretation of why we should be, why we're inferior, and why we should always be their servants. This is their interpretation. Y'all haven't heard it. This is it. They justify it by the Bible. They justify it by the Bible. See, the Ku Klux Klan is a religious organization. Y'all don't miss it. You know, they burn that cross, Nero, my God, to thee. Don't play them cheap. They're a religious organization. And so, so what they did is that they interpreted that Noah was drunk. Now, right away, we run into a problem. Now, tell me something. Why would God, you all assuming there is a God, I have my own interpretation of that, but why would God curse Ham when it's Noah who got drunk? I mean, does that make any sense? Here, Noah laid out flat, and Ham's coming, and I don't know how you come somebody without looking at him. But I've been showing you, it doesn't make no sense. Mental side makes no sense. That's how effective it is. They can tell us anything. Anything. Not only that, so they said they would doom Ham for the rest of eternity, his descendants, to be servants of the servants of God. Now let's do another analysis. Let's say all that's true. That Ham saw his father naked. His father, God cursed Ham and said, okay, all your children. And your children are going to be servants. Now we got a problem, because there's something else happened, you know. God destroyed the world by water. And guess who was given responsibility for being on the ark? Noah. And Noah could only take what? His family what? Two animals. Two of each animal. Now, he raises an interesting question. Here's the question. Since Ham, we know, is black, because even they say we're his descendants. Then since Noah was his father, and whites insist that we did not come from the same source, which I agree with them. That means Noah had to be what? Black. And since Noah was on the ark, the head of the ark, see? The head, the captain, the chief, the pilot. We know how we got here. Now I raise the question, how did everybody else get here since only animals were allowed on ark? We might have found answers to all of this stuff. If you want to play mind games, I'll play mind games with you. If you want to do that, see, that's why I say you cannot let other people define your existence. They do that every time. They'll always put you in an unflavorable light. You see what I'm talking about? We must look at everything, and the tragedy is every time they put something right, we believe it. Bobby, look. Here's the book. I mean, Bobby, look. And look here. Look at these footnotes. You know? This is what I'm talking about. That's mythicized. So we go on. Okay. Let me give you a couple other type of things. And I'm giving you things you are not going to agree. I'm talking about, one was the treatment of what? Idiot men. Because they're idiot men. They convinced us that predator idiot men were the worst black that ever lived. And we lost one karma lesson. We forgot. And this is a law of mine, a right law. Y'all want a right law? Here's one. Anytime all whites are against you, you're doing something right. And you never even heard a liberal white saying something good about idiot men. You know what you all forgot? What we forgot? We forgot idiot men making those white men carry him on their shoulders. We forgot that. We forgot idiot men did something no other African leader has ever done. Putting all the whites out of Uganda. And giving that job to black Americans. We forgot that. We forgot him making the ambassador from Britain kneel and come into his tent. We forgot all of that. apparatus, the mental apparatus went to work, and they got, and all those people that Idi Amin was supposed to have killed, they've never shown us one picture of them. They've never found the bodies. But they convinced us, and therefore they destroyed Uganda. They destroyed Uganda, one of the strongest African nations on the continent. The one who said that if Africa is to be free, black Americans will free it. Because blacks in the United States are the only blacks in the world who have been exposed to mass technology, who have been exposed to world government. That was Idi Amin. He had to be killed. He had to be in exile.
Bobby Wright, the eminent Dr. Bobby Eugene Wright. Open up for questions, brothers and sisters. Psychopathic racial personality. the essay, the dynamic essay by Dr. Bobby Wright. Man, I tell you, he's on point. And everybody knows it, too. He's on point. And so this is going to be a precursor to what we're going to discuss on Friday, you know, because we have tried and continue to try. We're talking about, I just played Bobby Wright almost 50 years ago, family, 50 years ago. And through all the decades, all of these decades of perceived progress, incremental progress. And you see what happened this past election. You see what happened with all these other Caucasians. And how, not just how they voted, but how they behaved. It's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. Give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Good afternoon, Brother Irv.
Good afternoon, Bob. Good afternoon, Bob Oshie.
Hey, my brother. How are you today, man?
Brother, I'm doing well.
Good.
Out here it's burning down.
Yeah. How are you doing? I forgot to call you this morning, man. How you
doing?
I
got a number of calls this morning from people all over the country asking, am I okay? Is everything good? I'm in an area in the South Bay called Torrance. The fire is over in the Malibu. That's a good little ways away, but the winds.
Yeah.
They have Santa Ana winds here
that can
have a fire in one place, and in 2 minutes you'll have it 10 miles down the road.
Yeah.
And that's nature.
Yep.
And white people are losing their minds because these are people that are pretty well off. These are the people who write the TV shows and the movies, the producers, the writers. Mm-hmm. You would know them to see them, and they're multimillionaires.
Mm-hmm.
And they are losing their homes, and they're on TV crying, and it's really sad, but you know, these people have more. They live in a culture where you have to have more than you need.
Yeah.
I believe that
once it's happened, once it's over, and it will be, that, you know, they'll mm-hmm. be able to live in some kind of shelter, not shelter, in a hotel rather, excuse me, in a hotel for some time until they rebuild their house a lot better than what it was. And that's just going to happen. Of course, there are some people that have faced those kind of calamities, and they were wiped out. They were devastated.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes even insurance companies didn't even want to pay, you know. So that's just a fact of that matter. People, yeah. Yeah.
These people will not miss them. They won't miss a meal. They won't miss a step. They will be emotionally upset, but they won't miss anything materialistic other than their memories if they can't replace.
Right.
Bob Oshie, you're talking about the psychopathic nature of Erugu.
Right.
I do believe it's genetic. I do believe this is in them inertly. They don't have to, you know, white folks want us to believe that we have to, you're taught to be a racist. And the word racism, we can delve into that another day. But I believe that I believe that white people are born with this in them, and it is they are taught to nurture it, to nurture that gene, to nurture that I am better than you. You're not as good as me.
Well, that's
and then that's
what Bobby Wright has stated from Jump Street. They have a proclivity to feel that way innately through their evolutionary development. Let's see how they have evolved. Now, okay, some say that when Africa is left out of Africa and migrated in other parts of the world, you know, then that means that for those who believe that there's only one human species, you know, but human species have the ability to adapt to environment. If you come into an environment that whatever it might be, and you cannot adapt, you do what? You die. So we came into Europe, and then Europe suffered a ice age. And so the body had to adapt. No longer was it tall and slender with deep melanated skin to protect it from the ultraviolet rays of the sun, because there was none. It became short and stocky with a lot of hair all over the place, particularly long hair to go down the back of his neck. Because why? The heart pumping blood, that blood had to get to his brain. And if the blood was exposed to some severe cold, then he would die. And so he had a stocky body with hair all over him, you know, and her. And so it was a cold, harsh environment, unyielding, and you became selfish. You became greedy. Mm-hmm. You became murderous. You know, your whole mindset, you know. And so that mindset stayed with the European throughout Europe into this very day in terms of how they are, you know. But one thing they did develop was the ability to be evasive, the ability to put on one face and actually be the other. You know, they're sneaky. You know, they're undermining, crafty, and so forth, you know, as they further evolved. But in their initial evolutionary evolvement, they were murderous. They see a kill. If one person, group would make a kill, he waiting in hiding and go over there and kill him and take his kill. You know, not that, hey, dude, you got some? Can I share some? That's a lot. Can I get it? No, you know, selfish and greedy. So I got to kill you if I'm going to get something.
And Baba Oshie, when we see American Africans mimicking this behavior, and I've seen it all my life. Now, the one thing I was told when I was growing up is don't trust nobody. And you go to that black business, man, you better go to the white business. You better get you a Jew lawyer. You know, the black people, you don't get you. And then it got to the point where they had us so brainwashed. And that lady was just on, made a lot of sense about the Jeffersons. I always thought that was the most ridiculous show that came out of the mind of a Jew. Mm-hmm. Because that's who wrote that show.
Sure.
And the thing that got me is when you go to a black restaurant, even the buffoons on television who work for these Caucasians, the black waitress, she chewing gum, hand on her hip, and we laughing.
Oh, yeah.
What you want? I'll be right back.
Right. Those are the stereotypes that continue to perpetuate. Sure.
And why do I know that, Baba Oshie? Because that has been taught. Television entertainment is lecturing. Entertainment is a teaching tool. It teaches you. It doesn't. You may be laughing, but Baba Oshie, if I can repeat what I saw 20 years ago, then I learned it. Mm-hmm. When you learn something, you know it forever. You were EMT when you were in the fire department.
Right.
You still know how to breathe in airway circulation.
Sure.
You still know that because you learned it. And that's what this television and these radios and this white media does. It teaches you, and at the same time, it's teaching the Caucasian that you're less than.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the psychopathic part in it is that their animalistic tendencies, to hide their food and squirrel it away, and I'm going to keep it. I'm going to have more than I need, so I'm not going to. You might die, but I won't.
Right.
Because the one. Yeah, and then the Caucasian,
what is his mindset? It's survival of the fittest. It is not coming together so we all can survive. No, it's me, the king of the hill.
Me.
So me. Me and mine. Yeah. To hell with you and yours.
Yeah.
It's all about me
you
and mine.
You got to get yours. You know,
yeah.
No.
See, survival of the fittest.
And by us buying into that individualism, mm-hmm. we shun away from our collective, being collective, and then we're all over the place. The black people, like the lady said, one is a Christian, the other one is an Islam, the other one is, they teach a Jew, Sammy Davis Jr., they all think that they're something else, but, and white people are quick to tell you, you know, black people, black people get on CNN, we're not monolithic.
What does that mean? We're not all alike. Right. I hate that when I heard that first heard that some many years ago. I told myself, I wish we were. I wish we had that kind of attitude.
We are, but we are.
You know, to work together.
But we're all African.
Yeah.
But we shun that. The one thing that we have in common with the light skinned black and the dark skinned black, the short black, the tall black, the is that we're Africans.
That's
but
right.
White folks want you to think you're different.
Right.
I'm not like that other guy because he's an N-word.
Yeah, because
you know, I was listening to something.
You divide and conquer. If I can keep you divided and keep you at each other and keep you looking at each other as opposed to looking at me, the puppet master.
That's right.
You know.
That's right.
I got you.
That's right.
You know.
Yes. And quick to tell your children. You're individual.
Yeah.
God made you different than everybody else. Well, how come if I'm so damn different, when I need some blood, I can get blood from another a black person or a white person or a red person or a green person?
Right.
Why? If I'm so different. No, the difference, I'm not different than you. It's your mind. It's the psychopathic mind that you have, Caucasian, that's different from me. Because I don't think as
right.
rugged individualism, and I keep saying that, Baba Oshie, because that's been drilled in my head forever. You got to get yours. The hell with everybody else because ain't nobody going to do nothing for you. Ain't
right.
nobody going to help you, man. Mm-hmm. You, are you serious? Are you saying, and you got to go along to get along and get in where you fit in.
Right.
Really? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So my point is, Baba Oshie, menticide, the psychopathic nature of the Caucasians of Arugu, is being exposed, and you said 50 years ago, and it's still relevant today.
Yeah,
it is still what they said. And so that should tell you something as an American African, that if something was said 50 years ago, and we're still living in that place, we haven't moved as a people.
No.
We haven't. We don't own it. The one thing that black people, the American Africans produce is sweat. We run the ball. Mm-hmm. We throw the ball.
Right.
We do a dance. We got sweat.
Right.
We don't have the institutions, the banking, the food. We don't grow out. We have sweat. That's what we sell to white folks. I can do a dance, boss, or I can dig this ditch, boss. But we teach, and we're still teaching our children
right.
to get a job, get it, and work until retirement, and feel good that you got a gold watch, and they told you good job. Job well done. They're going on to die, so we get another one of y'all and make him do what you did. Baba Oshie, I'm going to stop after this. The one guy asked me the other day, what would you rather have, Irving? Would you rather have money or would you rather have time? When I was in my 20s, I would have said money.
Mm-hmm.
But as I'm older now, I understand that the one thing that Urugu wants from you is your time. He wants to steal your time. Once I take all your time, now you're irrelevant. You're old now. You're of no use. And that's why elders, as is you, myself, and others that on this radio station and on this network, as elders, the one thing we are libraries. We're reference books. We have to keep letting these people know what. And the one thing the lady said, you don't know your history. You don't. History is a current event. That's what Dr. Henry Clark said. History tells you, what did he say, Baba Oshie? Where you are, where you've been, and where you need to be.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're sitting here looking in the Bible for some dates and something that makes sense, it's not going to happen. Did Noah go to a liquor store to get the liquor to get drunk? Did he make the liquor his day? Did he make the liquor itself? Or did it just appear?
Yeah.
Okay?
Well, the story goes... When they finally reached land, he celebrated. He had grapes. And so, you know, he Yeah, grapes, and that's how you make wine, and through the fermentation process, and you add some sugar and so forth. So he drank the wine in celebration, I guess, of landing, and okay, and then Ham saw his nakedness and told his brothers of his father's nakedness, and his two brothers, Japheth and Shem and Japheth, they walked backwards, so they did not see their father's nakedness and covered it. And so when Noah came out of that drunken stupor and found out what Ham had done, now, I don't understand this shit either, but once again, the shit didn't happen, but he curses Noah's son, Canaan. He doesn't curse
and Darren.
Ham. He doesn't curse. Noah doesn't curse, you know, Ham. He curses Ham's son, Canaan, to be servants unto his brothers, you know. And so, obviously, Noah is black and Canaan is black, and all those who are black, we come from Ham, you know, Mizraham, and, you know. But also, that's Egypt. But, of course, they don't want to make Egypt black today, you know, just like Dr. Wass. No, no, they are not black. They are Egyptian, but they are not black. Man, shut up.
Huh?
Yeah.
Israel is in Africa.
Yeah.
It's like the guy said, it's in the Middle East. In the middle of what? What are you talking about? But see, these questions were already answered by my ancestors. It was already written before they left. Not only were these things put on the written in stone, Dr. Henry Clark, Dr. Ben, and Sertima, all these people wrote these things down so that when they left, we would have a written, as did the ancestors in ancient Africa. They wrote it down because they understood that these Caucasians don't want you to know the truth. They only want you to know their truth, which is a perverted truth. That's why you have all this perversion now, Baba Osi.
Well, also too, what happened is that Champollion, Italian dude, found the Rosetta Stone, and the Rosetta Stone has Greek, Kemetic, and Coptic on the stone in three different languages, and so they were therefore able to decipher the Kemetic language, you know, and so now you see many people who can read the Medunecture, or they can read, quote, the hieroglyphs, but they can read the Medunecture, and they come up with the correct story based upon what we have stated. And if there's some issues with it, there's issues with it. But let me say this, you know, it ain't what the cracker say, it's what that says. And many times,
that's right,
it doesn't jive because, you know, they are purveyors of liars. They're the great prevaricators.
The natural born liars.
Mm-hmm.
I'm close with this, Baba Oshi. Napoleon had a quote. Napoleon said, and I read this, I forget where I read it. He said that religion is used to keep poor people from killing rich people.
Mm.
And I thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about that because religion is weaponized.
Yeah.
Religion is weaponized against you.
Mm-hmm.
That keeps you calm. It keeps you turn the other cheek. Turn the other cheek. Don't pass the meat. Pass the ammunition.
Yeah.
You know, well, because these people are these. And Burkina Faso, Brother Ibrahim, Captain Ibrahim said, I heard this little interview this morning. He said that if you come over here and you won't sell us any arms, then you need not come here. And what he was saying was, don't come here telling us to accept the homosexuals, and don't come over here telling us that you're going to give us aid. We don't want aid. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to defend ourselves.
Right. That's the bottom line.
That's it.
That's the bottom line. Let me say this, brother. If we had a just world, of course, we never had that. But let's say we did, because they want the people of religion, Islam, Christianity, you know, Judaism, and all the other ones, Christian and so forth, believe in the spirit of God and enlightenment. And if that was truly the case, then it should be that we as African people can go home and work with African people on the continent. The people who are there, that's they right. know that they shouldn't be there. And they should leave voluntarily. They should leave
right.
and not take a damn thing with them. They should. I mean, theoretically, but we know that's not going to happen. We know that once we are talking about doing what we're doing, we have to defend that. We don't have to defend that move. That's why the Africans here in the diaspora and the Africans on the continent must come together to build Africa. We must kick the Arabs out, kick the Chinese out, kick, you know, anybody who does not deal with our demands in terms of wanting to stay. Now, granted that the Chinese have done better things than the United States or the Europeans, because they always took resources and that was it. They didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. At least the Chinese built some roads and they built some other things.
Come on now.
But by the same token, you know, and I've seen some Chinese on video, you know, acting very bad towards African people, you know, to the point that, you know, that they were kicked out of Africa, but I want to beat their ass too, you know. But the fact of the matter is that's what has happened to African people. But we know that from the standpoint of Africa's kicking ass, that's a history, and we need to get back to that history. We need to revert back to that history by working out, by training, preparing to defend us as African people, and to defend the land, to defend the resources, to defend our way of life, an African way, you know?
That's right.
But see, they want you to continue in the Europeans' way. They want you to continue that this democracy is just as much yours as it is theirs, and so foolishly, you want to support it. You want to defend this. So, I mean, yes, I understand there's a lot of us, because we can't be in the society, but we can be all that we can be in the service. So we can't get the kind of positions in a society. So a lot of us have joined the service, you know. So there's a lot of us. Yeah. And so and what happens? If they want to throw down on somebody, a lot of them going to be us. And so therefore, if the United States, along with the European countries, want to continue to take Africa's resources, there's going to be a lot of us coming to Africa, killing Africans and taking our stuff for the benefit of white people. It's hard to say it, ain't it? And it's hard to think about it, but that's the reality.
Because Amos Wilson wrote this in the book called African-Centered Consciousness versus the New World Order, Garveyism in an Age of Globalism. He wrote that our reason for being in America is to serve white folks and to generate wealth for them. Yes. So there's been no change at all in the terms of our relationship with these people.
Yes.
In other words, we're still doing the same thing we did when they brought us over here.
Yes.
Because that's correct. We didn't come through Ellis Island. We were kidnapped and brought here, and we're generation after generation. You're talking about a people that tried to keep you enslaved over hundreds of years. That's not 20 years, not 30 years. We're talking generations to the point where American Africans think they're not in slavery, but then, you know, like I know, and I've said it before, you're wearing their clothes. You're speaking their language. You have their mindset.
Right.
We're so messed up in the head. Now, I can sit here and talk about all things wrong, but we can talk about, we're solution-oriented. But you're even marrying white women or marrying a white man and thinking you're doing something for yourself and for your people. You're showing other black people, I believe in integration. Well, how is this integration working out for you right now? Mm-hmm. Because you're in a country that is about, that claims they're going to invade a country that doesn't even have an army. Is that the same thing that the Jews are doing to Gaza?
Sure.
All the Hamas, all the leaders are dead, and you're still bombing those people.
Yeah.
And where are you getting the bombs from? Oh, I'm sorry, Baba Oshi, it's my tax dollars that's paying for those bombs.
Yeah.
So, and we as American Africans have no say in that. And if we do have a say, we had better say what these Caucasians say, or we will be ostracized.
Right.
We will, and all our wealth will be taken.
Yep.
So no, Baba Oshi, this psychopath we're living with.
Right. And understand that's who we're dealing with. We got to come together to defend that. We can't use a morality or moral persuasion on the world, which, of course, the world is not moral. It is amoral.
No.
It is evil because of the Urugu's virus. We've all been infected by the Urugu's virus. But I appreciate you, Brother Irv. Got some other callers.
Brother, thank you.
Them.
Thanks for letting me speak. But right. I'm put me on mute. I'm going to listen. You know I'm listening.
All right, yes, brother. Sir. All right. Hey, Brother Paul. How you doing, man?
Baba Ochi and the general, Big Brother Irv. Absolutely on point. Absolutely fantastic, man. You know, I'm not going to be long because we ain't got a lot of time. But, you know, yesterday my grandmother transitioned.
Oh, sorry to hear that. My condolences. My deep concern.
Don't be sorry. Don't be sorry. Mm-hmm. Don't be sorry, Baba Ochi. It's not a matter of being sorry because she was only a few years from 100.
Beautiful.
So the reality of it is she was able to live. She was gifted to live a full life. And I just feel so gifted also to be able to, obviously I've known her all my life and I've got so many memories and a lot of people never get to meet their grandparents.
Right.
So the reality of it is I just feel so fulfilled and just to go, you know, the last stages of her life, I was able to massage her feet. Mm-hmm. I was able to stroke her head.
Oh, beautiful.
You know what I mean? And, you know, those things just fill me for joy. I spoke to her a few days before she transitioned. We had a conversation. And, you know, it's a time of reflection. You know, I give thanks for life always, you know what I mean? Because it's a beautiful thing. I give thanks for being able to interject on this platform with yourself. And I give thanks for the beautiful work you do and, you, Irv, and everybody else who contributes because, you know, despite our adversaries, despite all the things you've said, which are absolutely correct and absolutely on point, the beautiful thing is you've got you and everybody else who contributes and makes this happen are using your voices, and you're not just sitting there silently and letting this thing run over us, you know. And if that's all we can do, that's what we must do.
Right.
And, we must continue.
Right. And, I mean, hey, Brother Paul, if this is your lane, stay in your lane and run it, okay? If that's what you're supposed to do, then to me, I'm going to do this. I mean, obviously, I'm over 70 years old, so I can't do too much. You know, just like yesterday with my grandson's game, they only had one referee. But I used to referee, you know, and I've considered myself a pretty referee, but my daughter said, "You ain't gonna get out there and referee," you know. And all they have.
I know. Your mind was telling you too, but the other side of it was saying, "Listen, man, you know, you got to protect yourself, which you must do.
Right.
That's the first. You got to protect yourself, Baba Ochi." So, look, you know, and I the only thing I request from you, the only thing I plea to your goodwill is, I just humbly and respectfully ask you to don't accept that this life, you know, you keep saying you're 70 and some people say age is just a number. Look, we gotta, it's very difficult for us because we've been totally indoctrinated by these people and they've given us all our ideas of who we are, but we're breaking out of that. And the reality of this, everything is energy and energy can't be destroyed. It's not me making it up or hocus pocus. Everything just transitions. That's why we don't say death. We say transition. Mm-hmm. As the body decomposes, it turns into gas. Okay? And gas goes back up into the ether.
Right.
And it don't stop.
Right.
Water is H2O, hydrogen and oxygen. Everything transitions. Everything. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is, Baba Ochi, the mind, we think the mind's in our head. We think the mind's in our brain, but it's not.
It's spirit.
Everything's connected. So Marcus Garvey said something, which I've never heard no one else say. He said, if there is life after death, right? He's going to help us in that life. Now, I don't hear a day where people don't call his name. I know he's alive.
Right.
There's not a day, whether it's on your side of the pond or this side of the pond. I do not hear a day. And I'm saying to myself, he said he can come back in the wind, but people don't recognize it's the wind you use with your voice. That's what makes you just animate the wind.
Mm-hmm.
You use electrical pulses to animate the wind. So the reality of it is that death is just an illusion. You know, this continuation. And once you acknowledge that and acknowledge what I mean by that is being in the act of knowing, not believing. And I humbly and respectfully say to my brother, Irv, belief isn't knowledge. Belief is just something someone told you and you just accept that. Mm-hmm. Knowledge is something you know.
You know.
And we are the people who are born knowing, mm-hmm. and then told and indoctrinated that we're born in sin and iniquity, all that crap. Born in sin and iniquity is mm-hmm. total rubbish. We mm-hmm. are born knowing, mm-hmm. okay? Everything is in our DNA. Everything is tapped into our subconscious in our DNA. And then we spend our life, because we are at the hands and the mercy of our adversaries, we spend our life being confused.
Right.
So we're walking around confused, talking hocus pocus and fairy tales mm-hmm. and absolute nonsense. But look, the reality, I'm not going to go get off my palm. The reality is that we do know. It's in us. We know. Right. So when we break this cycle like we're doing, we are doing it and you're doing it. And everybody who speaks out is doing it. Everybody who pushes back against these psychopaths are breaking the code. And that's what they fear the most. They fear that right. the most. But we're winning as well, you know. It's happening. So keep doing what you're doing and keeping it real, Baba Ochi. It's all brilliant.
You too, Brother Paul. Appreciate you, man. One day me and Irv and a few others, Kwaku, we're going to cross the pond, come to your place, man, and kick it with you, man.
Absolutely.
It'll happen.
Absolutely.
All right, my dear brother. Absolutely. Have a blessed day, man.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Like I said, I appreciate Irv and all those who call, all those who listen. You know, this is my lane. I'm staying in my lane. But my lane is key. It is vital in terms of trying to awaken the African mind. You know, I'm trying to put something on our mind. I'm trying to get us to think outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed us in, you know, making us believe this, that, or the other, as opposed to believing in ourselves and giving us these religious doctrines that it's hard to believe in these religious stories, more fanciful, more fairy tale than fairy tales, you know, than Hans Christian Andersen or whoever else, you know. But it is incumbent upon us as Africans to to release the vice grip that these folks have on our minds. And the only way to do that is knowledge of self, internalizing that knowledge of self. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shimhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahorie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. So I look forward to seeing you on Friday. Peace, family.